You're listening to Empower, the show that inspires you to live your best life with peace and purpose. Here is your host, Clayton Morris.
Hey everyone, I'm Clayton Morris. Thank you so much for finding the Empower Podcast, the podcast where we try to cut through the smoke and the fog and get real with our lives. Find out what's holding us back, get rid of the negative self-talk, the self-loathing in our lives, and talk to incredible human beings that can help us see the world in a different way. And I've just been overwhelmed, frankly, by the response from all of you who've been listening. You've been sending me Facebook messages, tweets, and emails, and just saying how touched you are by the podcast. Well, let me say back to you how touched I am by your response. So many of you have been saying how difficult it is to talk about the things that we talk about here on the show, to face our fears in life. And I'm just so thrilled to hear so many of you doing this. I'm also touched at how many of you have been leaving 5-star reviews over on iTunes. You've been lovely. You've been so kind about it. And we now crack the top 10 for self-help in the health section of iTunes, which is wonderful. Which brings me to today's guest on the show, who sits at number one in that very same category. So this is how great of a guy Lewis Howes is. We're going to talk to Lewis in just a moment. Lewis sent me a note after I had cracked the top 10, and he said, congratulations. So he sits at number one for his incredible podcast, The School of Greatness. Well, he's out with a brand new book of the same name, which he calls a real world guide to living bigger, loving deeper, and leaving a legacy. And I have to say, I had a chance to sit down with him and have a really emotional interview. In this interview, you're going to hear Lewis talk about things he doesn't really talk about. We got really deep into how he was able to overcome some of the things he overcame. He was a world-class athlete and had a career-ending injury and wound up sleeping on his sister's couch for nearly 2 years. And he pulled himself up from that. And of course, he is what he is today, a huge success. So we're going to talk to him about that journey. But also, we're going to talk about men, too, and why men are reluctant to talk about these things, as if we have to put on a brave face all the time and pretend that we're not able to experience emotion. So we're going to dive into that. And I had a great chance to meet him a few weeks ago here in New York City at the launch of his book. He invited me to his private book party. And then we had coffee, and we spent just a lovely hour together just sitting and talking. And he's one of these guys that when you first meet him, will just give you a big hug. You know what? He's like 6'5", and he's like, you know, I don't care. Just want to give you a big hug and just show you how much you mean to me. He's that kind of a guy. So I hope that comes through in this interview. I had a real great time talking with Lewis Howes. Sit back and enjoy this incredible interview. Lewis, it's my honor to have you here on the podcast. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Clayton. Appreciate it.
And congratulations on the book. How exhausting has this been now for you?
I tell you what, man. It's a lot of energy, but I get to remind myself in every moment that I'm blessed to be able to have a message to put out there and to be able to have people that want to interview me and all this great stuff that's happening. So it's a lot of work, but I'm so blessed it's happening.
I bet you have to feel some like some of those musicians that have to play like Let It Be every night,
gosh,
you know, like Paul
right?
McCartney, right? Like, but this audience is in tears, like listening to Paul, you know, and they've never gotten a chance to see him, and he's got to remind himself that, you know, these people haven't heard that message yet or haven't mm-hmm. witnessed that, right?
Exactly. So, you know, it's a blessing. It could be a lot worse. That's for sure.
So this journey's probably been obviously long for you writing this book. What's been the most revealing thing you've learned about yourself in writing this book?
One that I need support and I can't do it all on my own. And I think that's something that specifically entrepreneurs or even like sometimes moms and things like that, they feel like they have to do it all on their own and they put it all on themselves. They put all the pressure, the intensity, and that builds up a lot of weight on people and holds us back. So really building a team around the book, it's a literal team. I've got my whole team of about 10 who work on my business who've all played different parts from editing the book to proofreading it to coming up with ideas. Then I hired a full-time Facebook ad team. It's about 3 people to just do Facebook ads for the book and all that. Then I hired a video production team to create a book launch trailer that we worked the last 5 months on this thing together. Then I hired a music producer to produce the music for the trailer. That I hired. I've got a whole PR team that I hired in LA that's doing all the press stuff. Then I've got my publisher, which has a PR team, and all of them that are in the place. Then I've got a book launch campaign manager who's helping me route the orders the right way and get the messaging. Then I've got my web team. So it's just like on and on and on for one book. It's probably about 50 people involved.
You know, you say women suffer from this. I mean, I think men maybe even more than
– sure.
You know, I mean, we all suffer from it, right? But
exactly.
I think there's some bravado with men where we feel like we have to do it ourselves.
Yep.
What about that moment for you, you know, struck you when you said, you know, I can't do this all myself? Were you empowered or did you feel defeated?
You know, it's interesting because I think I used to – kind of pride myself in being like the lone wolf and trying to do my business on my own and learn it all on my own. And when I moved to New York City years ago, about 4.5, 5 years ago, I put on like 30 pounds and I wasn't sleeping. It's because all I was doing was working and trying to do it all on my own. And then I was just like, you know what? This is not serving me. This is not fun. I want to be healthy. I want to be able to sleep. I want to be able to do more. And as I started to ask mentors and ask people who had done it before and built their business, they were like, you know, you got to build a team, man. You've got to really find key people. You got to let go of wanting it done your way because it's not going to be perfect and it's not going to be your way ever, but it could be better and it might still be an effective way. So when I learned to just let go and trust people and bring on a team, I really started to see expansion in my business, but also in my life, you know, my health get back in order and my emotional well-being back in order. So it's crucial. It's something I'm constantly learning every single day, how to become a better teammate, how to be a better leader. And, you know, I make a lot of mistakes every day, I'm sure. So it's a constant evolution of building a team.
You know, one of the things I appreciate about you, and I've been listening to your show for a number of years, is that, you know, you bring an authenticity to your work, and I appreciate that about what you do. And it's not easy. It's not easy because there's this natural tendency, I think, in this world, and you write about this in the introduction of your book, but to be pulled in directions or chase things that are inauthentic. And that's really the point of this whole show is for people, you know, my listeners know about my breakdown and just facing the lack of authenticity and, you know, chasing other people's dreams and desires and, oh, that guy's doing this, so I have to do it. Going after other things. Do you think there's within men this fear that we're, you know, we have to keep up with other people and that there's an unwillingness for us to even talk about it? I mean, the reason I'm so attracted to your show is because your willingness to admit, look, I make mistakes and I don't have all the answers.
Yeah. I think with men, here's the thing. I've been learning a lot about myself as a man over the last 3 years. And I'm sure you've heard some of it from the podcast if you've been listening. But essentially, I learned that the myths that I grew up believing in as a man to be big and strong and to always be right and to have it all figured out and never show my emotions and make sure I make a lot of money because that's where my worth is going to be. Those kind of myths of society teaching me that and growing up thinking some of those things really don't serve me and they don't serve anyone else. And when I realized that, you know, letting go of trying to look a certain way and be perfect and have my image look a certain way, it's a difference between branding and looking perfect. And I'm a huge believer in branding as a business person and as an individual to grow, to increase results in your business, to get a better job. Like, you want to have a great brand because that's what people are attracted to. Now, with that brand, you can also bring a level of authenticity that's going to make you even more attractive than any image of branding could ever do for you. And I think once I started to realize this and just literally let go, you know, it was letting go of the fear of what people were going to say or think about me or talk about me behind my back or who wasn't going to want to hang out with me if I started letting them know exactly who I was. I let go of all of that And it was the scariest thing for me to do. But when I did that, I realized that the results were going through the roof in my life. The results were the way I felt about myself. The relationships I was having were better. The results of my business, because I was being 100% real as opposed to putting a perfect image out there.
The next morning when you woke up from that feeling, I mean, was it like an immediate thing? The next morning, I think the thing that I know that I've struggled with, which is the day after you realize.
Right.
You know, it's so easy to slip back into that, right? So the day after you have this awareness, how did you build on that? Because it's a muscle, right?
Sure.
And I mean, take it to the next day, the second day, the third day.
Yeah. I mean, I'll say like when I realized this, it was, you know, I'll just be open. You know, when I started thinking about this, I was like, what is it really that's holding me back? It was the, you know, experiences that I had that I never want to share with anyone. And I was sexually abused as a kid by a man when I was 5 that I didn't know. And I never told anyone for 25 years. And
wow.
I tried to act like it wasn't a big deal, but it always was a bigger deal on a deeper level for me. And it's the reason why I was so emotionally triggered in certain times in my life, in sports or with relationships. If I ever felt attacked, I would get so defensive and portray, you know, and just puff my chest and try to protect myself, as opposed to communicate like a normal human being and resolve the conflict or the situation. And when I finally realized that this wasn't serving me, and I started to talk about it with my family, with my friends, and then eventually I was like, you know what? I think I need to share this with the world, or at least with my world, with my audience. And when I did that, it was one of the scariest things. It took me months to do. And but it also was like, okay, I've let everything out of the bag. I'm 100% vulnerable. People know everything about me now. People know my biggest fears. So let's see what happens. It was kind of like I couldn't do anything else bad or share anything else because I wasn't afraid of anything else. And when I started to open up about it, it created such a sense of freedom and permission to be 100% real and open and honest and vulnerable with people moving forward. And it was like a muscle. Like every time I talked about that or other situations I was uncomfortable talking about, it became easier and easier to express. To now the point, it's like I just feel comfortable sharing about anything about myself because I realized that looking perfect doesn't serve me, and I'm never going to be perfect. And no one can connect with a perfect person. You know, think about it. If you had everything easy, if you had everything under control, if you never had a breakdown, and in every moment of your life you were running at 100%, it'd be really hard, Clayton, to connect with you and understand you because no one lives like that.
Right.
So it's just a matter of, you know, the key to success in life and business and everything that I've discovered is relationships. We're here on this planet together. So it's the key is building successful relationships. And the key to building successful relationships that I've discovered over the last few years is not proving how smart you are or the talents you have or talking about your achievements. It's about being vulnerable and a real human being with one another. That's what really makes an impact.
How do you square the two? Because obviously you have enormous talents and, you know, it's a delicate, my wife and I were talking about this the other day. It's a delicate fence walking, right?
Right.
And
it's a dance.
Yeah. And, you know, what she said to me, because I had been chasing, you know, just BS. I'd been chasing other people's dreams for myself. And like, since I was a child, I knew I wanted to work in television and broadcasting. I loved it. And, you know, a few years ago, I had this entrepreneurial bug and I've always had it, but I've felt like, oh, that's a get rich quick. I can do that too. You know, I can go do that and I can try that and I can do this and I can do that. And, you know, she had said to me, like, enough. Like, what are you chasing? What are you going after? You know, what is it? And she said, I wish you could see yourself the way I see you. Mm. And she's like, I hesitate to say, cause I don't want you to get a big ego. And I'm like, do you really think that's going to happen? You know, and then you walk away. And I said, so it is a, how do you find that balance where you don't, and I certainly don't feel this yet, like the puffing of the chest, and but also not walking around with your shoulders slumped?
It's a great question. I mean, again, it's like a dance, and I'm trying to all the time lead with confidence and certainty. But there's moments in my life where I'm not confident and certainty, you know. And a lot of people will say, you know, fake it till you make it and act confident and you'll become that way. A lot of it is body language, you know, and believing in yourself and being okay with knowing that you don't know it all. And what I mean by that is sometimes, you know, people will act like we know something or act smarter than where we are. But in those moments, I just say, you know, I don't know the answer, you know, or let's, you know, tell me. I'm happy for you to have the answer. And I don't need to be right all the time. I think before, I used to want to be right in relationships. I wanted to be right and they were wrong. And now I come from a place of, let's just figure out the result together. If you're the one who figured it out, cool. If I'm the one, cool. But let's do it together. And I think that comes with being self-aware and building confidence in your own self, with the work you've put in, with the talent that you've developed. And that takes time. You know, when I was 20, I wasn't as confident in myself and humble in myself as I am now, because I've developed the skills over time. And when you're first starting out on TV, you probably thought you were great, but were putting on an image that didn't serve you.
It was total bullshit.
Right? It was like this fake image. And now you're like, you can flow with things much easier. Your ego doesn't get in the way because you've done the work. You know you're good. You know you've got skills and talents with the best of them, and you can hang in those situations.
Yeah, it's like when you're a child, and obviously, you know, I studied martial arts for most of my life, and it was so fascinating to me. It's that when you start out, right, if you're attacked and you're a white belt, you just do what you do because you don't have any words in your head, right? You just you run or you deal with it in the moment, right? It's like what Bruce Lee used to talk about, right? But then you start studying. And you think you need to stand a certain way when someone attacks you, or you have to hold your hands to your side when someone attacks you. And so you spend years like hearing voices in your head. And then when you reach mastery, what happens, right? You go back to being a white belt again.
Mm.
You sort of act.
That's interesting.
You know, as if you have such training, you've got your 10,000 hours, right? As Malcolm Gladwell writes, you know how to react in that devilish situation, you know, it becomes a habit.
I also think the people that are at the top and continue to stay at the top for a long time are the ones that believe in growth and learning. And they, the more they know, they realize they don't know that much at all. At the same time, they know what they know, but they're also like, there's so much more to learn and there's so much more to discover. And they come from that growth learning mindset where they take on every day as a new opportunity to learn something and grow, as opposed to, I've got this figured out. I'm already the best. I can't learn anything else. No one can top me. It's not about that anymore for those people.
One of the things I'm really impressed with you about, and I can admit that I'm not good at it and I'm trying to learn it. And I can certainly learn from you in this. And one of the things you write about in the book is shedding that fake image of yourself.
Yeah.
Shaking it off, you know, sort of, taking off the shackles of yourself and getting real with yourself. Take me back to that time when you were on the couch in your sister's place after you had this collapse. Tell us about this collapse and how you realized the truth in you.
You know, my whole dream, my whole life was to be a professional athlete and to make a difference and to be seen and acknowledged. I think that's what a lot of kids want, is we want to be seen and know that we matter. And that's all I wanted as well. I wanted to matter in some way. And sports was my talent early on. So I wanted to matter at that. And when I got injured in my rookie season playing arena football, and I had to have surgery on my wrist. And so I was in a cast for 6 months and sleeping on my sister's couch for the next year and a half while I was in a state of kind of depression. I was like, well, I was in denial that my dream was over because I didn't have anything else. That was my whole identity, was wrapped up in sports. And now I couldn't do the thing that I had done for years. I didn't have a college degree and I didn't know what was going to happen next. So as a 23, 24-year-old kid, I was just really confused. And I remember You know, my sister was so incredibly loving and supportive. She didn't push me out for a while. She let me just kind of do nothing and be nothing for a number of months. And then I was able to shed some of the things by realizing that, hey, I've got a long life to live and I've got to figure something out. I can't just sleep on this couch forever. So I got to figure something out. I didn't know the answers, but I was attracted. I was instantly attracted to individuals who knew the answers for themselves. So I found key mentors early on that I soaked up their information like the biggest sponge in the world. I just soaked it up and said, I'm going to do whatever you tell me to do. Any challenge you give me, anything at all, even if it scares the crap out of me, I will do it because I had my back against the wall and I had nowhere else to go. So I developed a lot of skills early on because I had free time. This was like my master's program in life these 2 years.
Right.
I took public speaking class every week because I was terrified to speak in public. I went salsa dancing 4 times a week because I wanted to learn a new skill and get in my body since I couldn't play sports anymore. I was playing guitar every single day. I was going, I was working for these different mentors, learning about sales and marketing and branding and business and entrepreneurship because I had no clue what I was doing. So I just said, I'm going to soak this up and see how much value I can add to these mentors and learn. And that's what I did. That's the actions I took.
Does your heart break when you see some of these other athletes who are young in their career have what you know is a career-ending injury and you know they're not set up this way?
It's tough because, you know, for years, it's kind of like I thought I was going to make enough money and be fine and then be able to do whatever I wanted with it or something. But when that doesn't happen, and I never had a backup plan, I didn't learn anything in school really besides sports and people, but I didn't learn like books. It was just like, it's the scariest thing in the world. And if you're this, imagine if you're like the top athlete, if you're RG3 or whatever, quarterback, where you're the most relevant person in the NFL. Every sponsor wants you. Every player is scared of you. Every coach wants you. And then all of a sudden you get injured. No more sponsors want you. Your contract is going to be up soon. The team doesn't care. And the press doesn't talk about you. Your friends don't reach out anymore because you don't have much to offer.
It's that validation that's missing.
Oh my gosh. So your whole identity is gone. Your acknowledgement of being seen is gone. And then you don't have any backup. You haven't developed the skills to do anything outside of sports yet. It's a scary thing. And I have a lot of compassion for athletes because they give their life to their sport. And it takes giving your life to be that great at that level. And that doesn't, and you really don't have much time to develop skills in other areas. And it's just, I wish people had more compassion for it.
You know, you were trying all these different things, guitar, salsa dancing. You were going through trying to really discover yourself for the first time. And it sounds, a little bit like, I had Fran Tarkington on the show, on my show, Fox and Friends, a few weeks ago. And we were talking about one of his businesses and he, you know, was reminiscing about the Vikings days and so forth. And, you know, he's built, I think, like 3 or 4, hugely successful businesses. Yeah. And, you know, he had to really reinvent himself.
Yep.
Outside of pro football. And, I imagine that you had to get real with yourself because it's so easy to chase multiple shiny objects.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. It's super easy.
So how did you do it? How did you say, how did you say to yourself, well, you know, I'm really doing well at guitar. I think maybe, maybe if David Grohl is not playing in Foo Fighters, maybe exactly. I can step in and start playing.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I look at myself as like a decathlete of life because I was a decathlete in track and field. And I was great at one thing, and that was being really good at lots of things. But I was never great at one specific thing. And so I kind of, it's interesting because it's a dance for me. And I'm kind of like a jack of all trades and I can get really good at something to a certain level. And then I like to have that skill and access that and so I can apply it in other areas of my life. So it's challenging because I like to do a lot of different things and I like to evolve and learn new skills and hobbies all the time. But that can hold me back from growing one thing if I don't put my energy into that. So the way I've gotten around it is building a team to focus on one thing that will help make the income and make the sales and build the business so that I can continue to evolve and play and have fun as a human and do the things that I need to do.
That's really special because that's my, you know, that's always been my biggest struggle. And I'm sure many of the audience here and who are over on my blog have said the same thing. And it's there are so many voices in your head, people telling you should do this, telling you should do that. Have you empowered your team to say, Lewis, stay on the path?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, I give them a lot of ownership in different areas of the business. And I do a few things really well that really no one else could do in my position for our business. And that's, you know, interviews like this. That's my podcast, interviewing people for my show. That's coming up with the big ideas and packaging them and then allowing my team to create them and flesh the ideas out and really make them come to life. It's the relationships. You know, I've developed the relationships. It's speaking. It's doing the things that I do best. And I shouldn't really be doing the other things. Otherwise, I'm wasting my energy because other people can do it better and more efficient than I can.
When you talk about greatness, of course, and that's the theme of the book and the theme of your podcast, The School of Greatness. But I remember Earl Nightingale had a great definition of success. And he said, if you know where you are and you know where you're going and you're progressing towards that place, then he said success is a progressive realization of that worthy ideal.
I like that.
That you're never ending, right? That you're never going to get to some finite point of a monetary goal. So what is your worthy ideal?
Worthy ideal. Do you mean my definition of success or?
Yeah. Where do you see, you know, if you're working towards it your whole life, that even if you're, you know, you're 99 and you still haven't achieved, you haven't hit this thing that you've been in search of and moving towards this worthy ideal your whole life?
Well, I would say that, you know, for me, the worthy ideal is to continue to follow my dreams. And it's going to evolve over the years and through the seasons of life. You know, I look at life as seasons because that's what I did as an athlete. I had a bunch of different seasons I played in. And I look at my life as following my dreams in every season of my life. Whatever my dreams are, I believe that's what we are born to do, is to follow, discover what our dreams are and then follow them. And along the way, that means maximizing the gifts that we have, the talents we have, maximizing those talents, and then making the biggest impact on the maximum number of people around us while we pursue and achieve our dreams.
That's powerful.
I don't think there's any other way to live. Like we weren't born to not follow our dreams and just survive. We were born to go after something and live an extraordinary life. You know, the best lives out there are the ones of people who write their own story, not the ones who just react to what they think they're supposed to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but you know what's sad about it is that 95% most people are just reacting, right?
Yes, they are. Yeah,
95% of the population, you know, is going to work 40 years of their life. They have little to show for it in retirement, and they're living inside of someone else's rules.
And that's their choice. And you know, I've been there in certain seasons of my life as well, probably where I've done things that other people wanted me to do or to make other people proud as opposed to just doing what I wanted to do. And, you know, it's a choice we get to make every single day when we wake up. Are we going to be reactive towards what is happening in the world, or are we going to be intentional about what we want to create, who we want to be, the dreams we want to live, and how we're going to impact others? And every day we get to choose which one we want to do.
Yeah, it's so true. Because while 95% of the population is doing that, there's 5% that's, you know, comfortable in their retirement. Mm-hmm. These people have something in common. They did it their way their whole life. And they charted their own path. In the book, I want to dive into, and I don't want to give away a lot of the book. People need to go out and read it, and I'll have links in the show notes. It's out now. And congratulations on the huge success of it, by the way.
Thank you.
The transformation that you want people to go through in this book? Obviously, you have a connection to your audience on the podcast, and I want to get into how you think, you know, how it's different, right? Because you're communicating at a different level now through pages than you are with your own voice. But I feel like I'm listening to you while I'm reading the book.
That's good.
Yeah, that's key, right? You know,
it is.
It doesn't sound like someone else's words. Well, what sort of transformation do you want people, your readers, to go through while reading the book?
You know, 8 years ago, I had a dream. I had a dream that I was going to do something with my life after this injury. I got a Christmas present from 2007. Going into 2008, that Christmas of 2007, I got one present that year. My family, for those that celebrate Christmas, my family did what's called Secret Santa that year.
Right.
And my brother was the one who got the gift for me. So he handed me a gift, and it was a book. He didn't even wrap the book. He just said, "Hey, bro, Merry Christmas," and handed me the book. And it was probably the greatest gift I've ever received. It was a book called The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss. I had no clue about anything about how to make money or build a business or entrepreneurship or following your passion to make money. I had no clue this was even possible. And in 3 days, I completed the book. That was really fast for me because I was a slow reader. Completing the book, and right when I was done, I told myself, one day I'm going to become really good friends with this guy, Tim Ferriss. I don't know how I'm going to make it happen, but I'm going to make it happen. Whoever was the agent for this book, he's going to be my agent, because I can't believe that he put together this book and how it sold, and it's this huge bestseller. So I want that. And then I said the third thing, I'm going to write a book that creates possibility in the minds of millions of people around the world the way this book did for me. And that's the journey I want people to go through. When you feel like you're stuck, or you feel like you're not fully living to your capacity, or you just want to get to the next level. Maybe you're just like, how do I get to that next level, the next step? I've been stuck at this six-figure mark for years. I've been stuck in this career for years. I've been, you know, trying to figure out how to do this for years, or the relationship has kind of been stagnant for years. How do I get to that next level for what greatness looks like to me? I want people to go through that transformation so they have the complete inspiration, then action game plan, so that they can get the results they want.
And you take the readers through 8 core principles.
Yes.
Which I love. And it's so true. And I love that you don't leave the body out, which is so important, and sleep. I mean, everything suffers, right? We were just talking about, you know, before we got on the show here, just like overnight, not getting enough sleep and what it does to the body and the mind. And obviously, it
kills you.
Yeah, it absolutely kills you. I love pulling back the curtain on this process. Yeah. You know, you have an idea, you're sitting there. When you know you have your team around you, but it germinates with you, right? It starts with you.
Yep.
What was the most difficult part of, you know, your editors, your team saying we got to take this out?
Well, I would say maybe it wasn't even my team saying that. It was originally my agent and I were going to write a business book, and it's going to teach people how to make millions living their dream. And I wrote this proposal for like 7 or 8 months. I had it all done. He loved it. He was like, "This is great. Let's go. I'm going to shop it." And something inside of me was just, I wasn't feeling it. I was like, "This is not the book that I want to put out to the world right now. This is not the message I want to send out to the world. I feel like I could write this book anytime. But what I really want to do is teach people how to live a great life on all areas of life. And maybe it's not as specific as how to be a successful entrepreneur and this and that. But I was like, that's just not what I want to do right now. And I was so terrified to tell my agent, because he'd done so much work editing this and we had planned this for a year. And I told him, I said, "You know, I hate to say this and I'm not sure how you're going to react, but that's not the book I want to write. Here's what I really want to write." And I told him that story, and he said, "Sounds good. Let's do it." You know? And I was like, whoa, it was a huge relief. So I think it was the lesson I learned was like to trust my gut and to trust my body for what it was telling me that I really wanted, not what I thought someone else wanted.
See, that's what I love about you, and I've mentioned it a couple of times. You have this awareness that I think people can really, if you know, if they don't get anything else from the show today, to really listen to this, because I think, you know, what you're saying is you have this awareness that a lot of people don't give themselves credit for, or they don't listen to their gut instinct. And you mention a couple of times in the book, a couple of breakthroughs where you had this awareness, but I think, and I didn't even know this part of it. So
yeah, not many people know it. Yeah.
And so this, having this, self-awareness, what is it about it? When you see it, are you able to identify this trigger now?
Yes. It doesn't mean I follow it sometimes, but I'm always able to be aware of it.
Right. And I think a lot of us do. Yeah.
You know, it doesn't mean I'm always following through on what my body's saying, but it goes back to getting clear on what you want and what your dreams are. And when you know what your vision is, your body and your emotions are going to be receptive to things you're doing or not receptive. And they're going to guide you in the right way. So in the first chapter, I talk about vision as one of the most powerful things you can do. The most powerful principle is being clear on what you want first. Now, that may seem like a simple thing, but I tell you what, 95% of my podcast listeners don't know what they want. And that's why they come, because they're like, well, I want this and this and this and this, and I want all these things. But you got to get very clear on what you want and why you want it. And if you just like, well, I want to make $1 million. Okay, well, why? Well, because I want to, you know, have a big house and this and this. That's not a big enough why. Why? That's not a meaningful enough why. And you're going to burn out really fast, like I did when I was just chasing money early on. And you've got to really have a deeper meaning of service behind your why. Otherwise, you're going to be feeling unfulfilled and unsettled. And you might get a bunch of success and money, but 10 years later, you'd be like, what am I doing with my life? So the first thing is getting clear on your vision. And how you can do that is literally going into nature for 60 minutes with no distractions, no phones, no noise around you except for nature, and dreaming. As silly as this may sound, we don't dream enough anymore. Hmm. We don't take the time that we deserve to allow ourselves to think about, if I could have anything I want in my life, if I could become any type of person, what do I want and who do I want to become? Hmm. We don't write it down and visualize what is possible for us. We are so caught up in busyness and checking the phone and getting on email and doing what we want other people want us to do, and we don't dream. And so I am constantly in the process of dreaming of what is it I want. And things can shift over time. You know, we don't have to be committed to this vision for the rest of our life. When I was in high school, all I wanted was to be a collegiate athlete. In college, all I wanted was to be a pro athlete. You know, it's like one step at a time. It doesn't have to be like figuring out life, but just what do you want right now?
Oh, brother, you're speaking my language. I love this. We don't practice it enough, but the other day I was talking about, I put up a piece on my website about the gentle art of being bored. And, you know, we stand in line at Starbucks, yes. We do these other things, but we fill these times with just picking up our phones. We can't just stand there and just like smell the coffee and look at the beans and look at the people and just take it in. We have to pull our phones out of our pocket and just check email. And we know we're not going to respond to the email while we're in line. But we look at it and it makes us anxious and it bothers us. And then we realize we have to do it later. And then we've wasted 5 minutes of our life. You're so right. I mean, having that quiet time, you know, some of the biggest breakthroughs have come from, you know, Einstein out of his lab, out of his patent office, taking walks.
Exactly.
Had the biggest breakthrough. Steve Jobs.
It's usually when we're not working on something, when we figure out what we want or the ideas to help us to work on something better.
I love that. Stripping away the BS. Because, you know, I think what you talked about with your audience, like 95% of them not really knowing what they want. They say they want $1 million. They want this. They want that. I think we follow so many other people's voices and we're chasing so many other things. And this was, you know, this was my problem. This was exactly my problem, which is, you know, I know that I'm a speaker, and I know that I'm a broadcaster. So why do all these other things? Why search for all of these other things to kind of lie to myself that I'm not these things? And to strip away the BS and to just get down to the core essence of who we are is where we could have these big breakthroughs, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, in the book, I love that you lead off the book with this quote from Rumi. And I love that you say, or well, I love that he says, but you chose to lead the book off with this in the preface, which is you were born with goodness and trust. You were born with goodness and trust. So when do we lose it?
Mm-hmm. I think we lose it when we start living up to the pressures and the wants of everyone else, and we start getting so greedy, and we start protecting ourselves from looking bad, from failure, from not being seen, not being heard, and those walls begin to build, and those walls of trust begin to go in front of us where we're not trusting other people and they're not trusting us.
It's amazing. And it's amazing to me that you knew that certain pieces were missing. What was speaking to you? Because you had, like I said, a couple of these breakdowns. But I love when you discovered LinkedIn and you built this huge business. And you talk about this in the book, achieving this level of success. And you thought, God, I'm at 30 years old. I should have had all this money. And this was what I thought I was looking for.
Yep.
When I was, sleeping on my sister's couch. And then I reached this level of success and a huge piece was missing. What was missing then?
I was coming from a place of wanting to prove people wrong, and I was coming from a place of resentment, of anger and frustration, because I hadn't healed a lot of things from my past that was driving me. You know, it's funny. This anger can fuel you to achieve some incredible things. You know, resentment towards people, resentment of our parents or an ex-boyfriend or girlfriend. To prove people wrong, we can achieve some incredible results because that's fuel, that's fire. But I'm telling you from my experience, when I had the fuel of proving people wrong or proving that I'm good enough, at the end of the day, when I achieved everything to prove people wrong or that I'm good enough, I would lay in my bed and be like, why am I the most unhappy, lonely person in the world right now? And I didn't understand it until about, 29, 30 years old, where I realized that that's what I was doing. I was proving people wrong. I was trying to look good. I was trying to impress instead of inspire. And when I started to shift from proving wrong and doing things out of resentment towards living in service to inspire people and to be the best human I can be and inspire myself by going after my dreams – in a positive way, that's when I felt like I could sleep a lot better at night. And that's when I realized I was making a deeper connection with people because it was coming off my body in such a better way than, these walls that were up before.
I'm curious of any case studies that you have from your show, from, the many people you have such a massive audience for School of Greatness. Have any people come to you and gone through this journey with you and decided to start something on their own and listen to that inner voice and connect with that greatness?
Yeah, I mean, oh man. Yeah, I was at Chris Ducker, a mutual friend of ours. I spoke at his event last year. I mean, I've had some incredible case studies and emails from lots of different episodes, but one that I remember, I did an episode on, I think it was the top 10 way or 10 ways to end toxic relationships. And this woman came up to me who was at the event and she said, Lewis, you literally changed my life from that one episode. I had been in an abusive marriage for years and I could see it from she was overweight. You could see that she was just kind of like had been weathered, right? And had a beautiful heart. And she was like, 2 weeks ago, I finally listened to that podcast and I got the courage that I needed to end the relationship. And it's been a long time coming. Everyone's tried to get me out of it. I never had the courage or the worth to leave because I didn't feel like anyone would ever love me and be there for me. But that podcast, what you taught, gave me the tools to finally see that I was worthy and how to step out of it in a positive way. And examples like that just make me really excited to know that I'm able to bring on people because it wasn't me. I brought on someone who taught this. And for me, it's not about teaching people everything I know. It's about how can I be the human I need to be to attract the wisest individuals in the world so they can teach.
Right.
Because I want to continue to learn. And I want to learn how to, I just got out of a relationship that was not toxic, but there were some things that weren't working for both of us. Our visions weren't aligned. And it was extremely challenging for me to end the relationship because I love this woman so much. She's my best friend. And for a few months afterwards, you know, we broke up a few months ago. It's been one of the hardest 3 months of my life, most challenging because it's so confusing of how much love I have and the connection, but knowing that it's not working right now and just like, oh man. So I'm constantly learning and I'm seeking out wisdom from people who have done it before. And, I don't know where I was going with this, but you know,
no, but it's about, it's about authenticity and yeah. You know, she found her authentic self feeling unworthy and realizing that she can be authentic and real. And that's exactly what you're talking about, which is that authentic, you know, that authentic part of you. You're listening to all these voices though. How do you remain true to you?
Yeah.
You know, and staying true while you're seeking this wisdom. You know, we had Byron, the great Byron Katie here on the show, who's just a sage. I mean, she's just changed millions of lives. And, you know, I asked her this question about how does she go from being Byron Katie in the green room to then going out and changing Oprah's life on Oprah's show, you know, and what did that, does she feel ego as she's getting in the car and going to Oprah's studio, you know, years ago and all that? She said, no. And she said, I went there as a student and I was blessed and learned as much from her as she learned from me. And I arrived as a student. And I think that's what you know, that's the authenticity that you bring to your audience with your show.
Yeah.
And this book.
Yeah, that's right. You know, listen, I have a lot to give. I have a lot of things that I've done that I have experience and I have answers of what could work, and I'm good at coaching people, and I can give answers if people have questions. But I'm also in the place of like, you know, this book is kind of like I'm just the disciple of lots of inspiring people sharing their lessons and their stories, and I want to continue being that for years. But it also means that I can mentor and coach people at the same time. But I'm going to want to learn how to I want to continue to be mentored my whole life, and that's where I want to come from.
It's a great place to be. Well, the book is The School of Greatness. It is out now. Go to Amazon, go to iBooks, download it, buy a copy for your family, your friends. Give a book like you received with Tim Ferriss's book, and maybe it can and change a life. I got to ask you though, when you were on your sister's couch, were you able to date at all? Were you able to bring?
I was actually. I had a girlfriend that that I was dating before I got injured. So she stayed with me for a while, but I ended up ending it because it was kind of toxic as well. But
on the couch, it's tough.
Yeah. She would come over and she had an apartment. I would go over there and stuff like that. But then I ended it and I was pretty much alone. I was focused on my own self. I was like, how can I get new skills and learn and grow? And
yeah.
So she had a golden lab that was my girlfriend for that time that laid on me. So.
Well, how can people learn more about not only you, I mean, the book and everything you're currently working on? Where's the best place to find
it? Yeah, best place is check out the podcast, School of Greatness, on iTunes or lewishowes.com. I got a lot of info over there where I publish everything. But also, I think I found you on Instagram. So Follow me on social media at Lewis Howes, anywhere you like to hang out.
That's wonderful. Awesome, Lewis. Well, it's been a real honor, real pleasure. And thanks for letting us dive in and get real deep with everything you've been working on with the School of Greatness.
Thank you, Clayton. Appreciate it.
My great thanks to Lewis for a really inspiring interview. Again, go to our podcast page at claytonmorris.com. There you'll see all of the show notes from today's episode and links to everything that Lewis and I talked about in today's show, including his book, The School of Greatness. So be sure and go and download it. What an incredible Christmas gift as well that you could get for someone that you care deeply about. So go check that out. So again, thanks to Lewis. I really, really appreciate his time, his energy, and his honesty. Next week on Empower, I am really excited to join with Sean Acor. Now, he's become a good friend as well. And Sean is a Harvard researcher who has written a number of books about happiness. And that's what he does. He's basically devoted his life to learning and studying happiness and how we can actually develop it and add it into our lives. Before we can be happy or successful, we first need to develop this ability to see what positive change we can create in our own lives.
He's actually has a new program that he's partnered with Oprah Winfrey on. He's going to tell us all about that. I'm super excited. So that will be next week right here on Empower. Thank you so much for subscribing. Please, if you would be so kind, go over to iTunes and leave a nice review and share this podcast with anyone that you care deeply about. Thank you all. I love you. We'll see you back here next week.